and welcome to Worlds Apart. A pivot to Asia has long become a buzzword in geopolitical circles as great powers turn their eyes and strengthen their presence in this vast region. But after the Trump administration tariffs on many Asian nations and the threat of more to come, won't Asia itself have to pivot both economically and geopolitically? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined by Dr. Hang Song Nguyen, President of the Diplomatic Academy of Vietnam. Mr. Nguyen, it's great to talk to you. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for having me on your program.
Now, Vietnam is no stranger to great power competition and confrontation. You went through that during the Cold War, having to do this very delicate balancing between the United States, China, and the Soviet Union. As these great power rivalry gathers momentum yet again, do you expect this round to be more or less precarious?
Well, we do observe that major powers competition is on the rise, and that is obviously having an impact everywhere in the world, including ourselves. However, our response hasn't changed. We will continue to be ourselves. We'll continue to be relying on ourselves. We'll continue to be building a community with the nations of Southeast Asian's countries, ASEAN, so we can have a home and a region that is stable, that is resilient, and that is prosperous, and having good relationship with every other major powers and poles, so to say, in this multipolar world.
Well, that's an amazing aspiration, but I suppose it's difficult to realize in this day and age, especially with this new American president whose policies are quite blunt, at times very unpredictable. I wonder, how does Vietnam adjusting to this new mode of international cooperation coming from the White House? Have you figured out a way to, if not grow your relationship, then at least minimize the damage?
Well, first of all, it has never been easy to maintain a relationship with any of the major powers. So the United States under President Trump is no exception. It's always very delicate. Major powers are always very demanding. And we minor states always have to maneuver a lot in order to have good relationship with any of the major powers. But President Trump is, of course, has a very unique way of looking at the world. He has a very, so to say, strange perception of the interests and threats that's coming towards the United States, and hence a very different approach towards its allies and partners. So we have to accept that reality and trying to understand the perspective of the United States, trying to maintain dialogues, trying to explain ourselves to the administration and to make him look at us as a partners and not a opponent and not a competitor. It's not easy, but President Trump has proven also that he can change and he can, modify his position.
Now, as far as I know, the United States is Vietnam's largest export market, which makes you very exposed to the Trump administration tariffs. I've seen some predictions that Vietnam may have to slash up to one-fifth of its exports to the United States, which makes you one of the hardest hit countries in Southeast Asia. How big is the problem as far as you are concerned? Is that a challenge?
Yes, certainly it's a challenge. You are right. Vietnam, the United States is the biggest export market of Vietnam, and being taxed heavily is going to pose a huge challenge towards Vietnam exporter. However, the situation might not be as bad as many of the media articles seem to suggest. Well, indication is that many of the investors are still looking at a long-term prospect of the Vietnam's economy. Vietnam thinks that its interest aligns with that of the United States, a long-term interest in the region. And even with President Trump's peculiar way of looking at the world, we still think that Vietnam is actually in line with his strategic goals in the region.
Do I understand you correctly that you are sort of circumventing some of the rhetoric of Mr. Trump, counting that the big corporations and big businesses will continue doing business with you no matter what the White House has to say?
Yes. Well, we've seen this from, for example, Nike, for example, Intel, for example, other major businesses that are working in Vietnam. They continue to look at Vietnam's prospect for development as very important to the national economic interests of the United States itself. And because of that, they continue to make a bet on Vietnam despite the heavy taxes that the administration is currently levying on Vietnam. So that says a lot about how different the administration is looking at Vietnam and how the businesses are looking at Vietnam.
And yet, I think you would agree that the tariff issue presents a very interesting dilemma that goes beyond immediate tariffs. I mean, it's ultimately a choice that any country has to make between protesting against tariffs as the unfair means of competition or putting pressure, or accepting them tacitly and trying to negotiate the reduction. Which route is closer to Vietnam?
Well, obviously, no one likes the tariff. We thought that it's a very unfair way of approaching business partners. But we also understand that Mr. Trump is pursuing certain national interests in his own way. And so we keep talking to him and trying to convince him that there is another way of looking at things that doesn't hurt his own very interest. And it's possible to also find a mutually beneficial ways of approaching the trade issues. So we are still hopeful that President Trump can change.
Now, in addition to the 20% tariff, the Trump administration has also imposed a 40% tariff on goods deemed to be transshipped through Vietnam. And that's in and of itself an interesting case because Vietnamese goods rely heavily on Chinese components. Do you see that as a matter of trade or perhaps a matter of interfering directly in your industrial policy?
We certainly understand where that comes from. They certainly look at trade with China very negatively. And any trade that they saw as transshipments from China is supposed to be heavily taxed. However, I think they are confused between reorganized supply chain because of their very own demand or desire to decouple from China and transshipments from China. They are confusing these two phenomena. Many of the products that got produced in Vietnam are a result of his very own policy of encouraging decoupling from China. And hence, many manufacturers moved to Southeast Asia in order to avoid being taxed directly from the administration. But then he confused that with transshipments, which is very unfortunate. We are trying to explain that to the administrations, and I think they will get it.
Now, the United States is a powerful country and a very attractive market, but it's not without its own sensibilities. You know, its power has limitations, especially when, countries get together and try to argue their own collective case. And yet, in this particular example, we have seen almost no collective action on the part of the countries that have been tariffed, that have received tariffs from the Trump administration. Why do you think we have seen so little cooperation on this front?
Well, maybe they are cooperating, but not outside of the public purview. Southeast Asia certainly are talking among ourselves on how to strengthen their resilience, how to diversify, and how to face the reality. So, yes, we are cooperating, we are collaborating, just not in a public manner that is going to pose a direct provocations towards the United States. I'm sure that Japan, Korea are also talking, for example, on shipbuilding, how they can strengthen their shipbuildings and how they can, these two countries can pose a leverage towards the United States. So yes, countries are actually cooperating.
You have written a lot about the so-called bamboo diplomacy, sticking together with allies and friends in order to be more resilient or to be stronger. Do you think it's actually applicable to this situation? Because, as you said, the countries may be talking behind closed doors to each other, but sooner or later they will have to come to the table and, argue their case hard enough so that the Americans themselves could pull back a little bit. But I haven't seen that being done yet.
Well, it's very interesting that you raised the metaphor, bamboo diplomacy. I found that is talked about more outside of the country than by the Vietnamese themselves. However, bamboo diplomacy connotates a collective strength. The bamboo trees, when combined, is going to provide them strength. It's going to provide them a better chance to protect their interests and the principles. That's actually precisely what Vietnam's are doing, diversification, combining strength with its neighbors, and at the same time be able to withstand the forces, the geopolitical forces. So yes, bamboo diplomacy isn't just about the flexible branches. It's also about the root, about the combined strength of the bamboo trees when stick together.
I don't know if you would agree with that, but I see a major cultural clash at play here, because what's deemed a virtue in Asia, this delicate, measured, balanced, multifaceted approach, is viewed as weakness or even malfeasance by the Trump administration. Do you think this divide could be breached in a practical way to the satisfaction of all parties?
Well, I don't think that President Trump at the moment is exploiting the cultural approach that many of the Southeast Asians are taking. President Trump isn't that sensitive in the first place. What he is doing is using his sheer, the United States' sheer power to impose his vision, impose his interests on Southeast Asian countries. I think that is going to have an opposite effect. If anyone who advises him to exploit the weaknesses, because that gives the ASEAN collective strength, that gives ASEAN more reason to be together. And so if anyone is advising him to exploit that weakness, I'm afraid that's going to give him the opposite effect.
Now, speaking about ASEAN countries, of which Vietnam is a member, many of them, the organization itself, prides itself on being good handlers of the process of cooperation. But I think the very nature of cooperation or collaboration is being forcibly changed before our eyes. The Americans, with their introduction of transshipment tariffs, do attempt to change the nature of globalization. They do attempt to change the international supply chains as they exist today. Do you think the ASEAN countries are going to respond in any visible manner to this?
I think ASEAN countries realized that they are facing the unprecedented challenge of today's global economics and global political situation. It's something that they have not seen in the past 40 years. Since the expansion of the organization. So they are having to re-strategize themselves, reiterate their relevance. What is the reason for having ASEAN in the first place? What is going to be the collective and the consensus interest that all countries are sticking together? Secondly, how to continue to make ASEAN attractive to foreign investors? One that was the driver of ASEAN prosperity over the past 4 years now is gone. So ASEAN will have to find ways to regain its attractiveness as an economic dynamic region. And I think they are finding some of the answers to those key questions. One, ASEAN is now at the hub of the Indo-Pacific, which is a very dynamic region. Second, they have a lot of interest by every polis in this multipolar setting in the region. And third, they are very in close proximity to China, which is also another locomotive in the global growth. And that is a huge advantage that ASEAN finds themselves to be in. And so what is ASEAN going to be the way to be able to tap into those opportunities? I think ASEAN is getting there.
Well, Mr. Nguyen, we have to take a very short break right now, but we will be back in just a few moments. Stay tuned.
This is it, Moscow. And you know why I'm here? Because when somebody tells me that I cannot report something, it's my nature as a journalist to question why. Why can you tell Ukraine's side of the story, but you can't tell Russia's side of the story? That would be a half-truth. You know another way of saying half-truth? A lie. When Washington or London or whoever tells me I'm not allowed to tell the truth, you know what I do? The opposite. I shine a light on it. That is the Sanchez Effect. And I'm Rick Sanchez. Look for it.
Welcome back to Worlds Apart with Dr. Hang Son Nguyen, president of the Diplomatic Academy of Vietnam. Dr. Nguyen, you mentioned China just before we went to break, and it clearly has a lot of skin in the game, especially when it comes to the transshipment tariffs and the potential limits on foreign components. I wonder if the U.S. tariffs provide Asian countries, smaller Asian countries, with an opportunity to perhaps put pressure not on the United States, but on China and reach better deals, better accommodation with this giant nation?
Yes, that's a very good question. I think China has been looking ASEAN lately as a huge stepping stone in order to enter the U.S. market. But that is seen by the United States, as we've seen, unfavorably as a transshipment hub for China to export its market to the United States. So I think it's a good opportunity for China also to reassess their economic strategy towards its neighborhood, whether to use them as a manufacturing base for exports to other markets, or to actually develop the place and grow together with China. China needs a market. China needs a place who can buy and who must buy a huge excessive production capability. And Southeast Asia can provide that. But in order to get there, China needs to invest and develop the place and raise the overall income level of not just its own country, but also Southeast Asia, so we can grow together. I think it's a good time for China to re-strategize their economic strategy with its neighbor as well. And I think in a way they are doing, by investing heavily into the infrastructure in the region, by also transferring some of the technology to the region. But I think they need to do more.
And I think perhaps the economic issue is also connected with the maritime or security policy. I know that the situation with the territoriality and demarcation of borders in the South China Sea is of key interest to Vietnam, as for many of your neighbors. And I heard you say in a public lecture that China's behavior there is not uniform. On certain issues, they do behave like good, responsible partners, and on some others, they allow themselves to be more pushy or perhaps more self-interested. What do you think prompts this latter self-centered behavior?
I think China is large, and the way Beijing thinks might be slightly different from the actual actions that they are undertaken by the different forces in the South China Sea. And in the South China Sea, there are quite a number of different actors, Chinese actors at play. We have the provincial government, we have the Navy, we have the Coast Guards, we have the fishermen. They might be behaving differently, driven by different interests, not necessarily fully in line with Beijing wishes. So whereas Beijing want peace and stability, right, which is so crucial for China's development, Beijing wants to be seen as a peacemaker, not a war maker, or not a conflict maker. Beijing wants to be seen as a global actor that is providing governance and solutions to conflict, not the one that creates it. But in fact, the lower level governments and the actors are not behaving in such a manner. So there are some discrepancies between the different actors in China. There are discrepancies between words and deeds, and that sometimes confuses a lot the countries in the neighborhood.
Well, that's an interesting way of analyzing it, because I mean, most people outside China think of the Chinese system as heavily centralized, and of the central authorities having enough leverage over all the parties to ensure the central line. And you're saying that perhaps no, there could be, you know, some discrepancies. I wonder, though, if In some of its claims in the South China Sea, our Chinese partners behave in a way that are not that dissimilar from the Trump administration and its act around the tariffs. You know, when they are trying to score an advantage over others simply because they can, they have enough power to do so. Mm.
Well, unfortunately, major powers are increasingly behaving the same, cherry-picking the rules, cherry-picking international law, unilaterally interpreting the laws in the ways that benefit them the most. So, unfortunately, you're right that that China and the United States somehow and sometimes behave more or less the same. But in the long-term interests of the major powers, be it China or the United States, it's they cannot provide global leaderships and become a global leader if they behave that way. At the end of the day, if they truly wants to become the number one global players, they need to rule by law. They need to respect the rule of law and not rule by law. They have to create a system and they have to stick to the system and exercise restraint.
Now, I found that Vietnam has a very interesting position or policy on the maritime issues because on the one hand, you open your ports to the Indian or European ships to send a signal to your Chinese neighbors that you are for open seas policies. But on the other hand, you also insist on refraining from joining any military alliances or allowing your territory or your infrastructure to be used against third parties. Do you think this hedging approach is likely to stay as this geopolitical rivalry among great powers intensifies?
Yeah, we don't call it hedging. It's terminology that is used by some of the international relations scholars. But I think we are not against the idea. The idea is that you take multiple measures in multiple directions in order to promote cooperation at the same time, but also minimize the risk at the same time. And to a certain extent, I think that is properly understood by all the major players out there. And I think there is no confusion as what Vietnam strategically want, and they accept the hedging, so-called, measures by minor states like Vietnam.
Now, speaking about what Vietnam strategically wants, you want to grow faster, you want to rise to a new level of development. I've heard you say that Vietnam is trying to overcome the middle income gap and go to the upper layer of the supply chain. Do you think those ambitions can still be realized, or do you think they perhaps need to be reviewed?
I think there's a good foundations to give the Vietnamese leaderships to believe that they can achieve those goals. They have achieved tremendously in the past 4 years, and that gives them a boost of confidence. And also the people have accumulated enough capability to the extent that they think that they can move to a next stage where they can even invest more in the country's growth. And also there has been good examples elsewhere of countries, the level of Vietnam, being able to tap onto its own domestic resources. And there are also new developments like the technological advancements that gives them the confidence that if they can tap into that, it is possible to pull the economy into the high-speed railway network and to pull them into a higher development model.
The reason I'm asking about that is because the rationale of the supply chain placement seems to be changing right now. And over the last couple of months and years, we have seen that it is easier for the exporters of raw materials to adjust and find new trading partners under this American pressure than, for example, for the for those whose products are more sophisticated. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm asking whether it makes sense to invest so much energy, so much determination into being at the upper level of the supply chain, because those are niche markets, mm-hmm. and I assume they come with additional risk that, some president in some other country can make a new policy and upset all the progress that the country has done, has built on economically.
Well, what Vietnam believes is that globalization cannot be reversed.
So you don't think that Donald Trump will succeed in what he's doing?
I don't think so. We think that certain administrations, certain government might dislike globalization because of their domestic issues. But globalization per se, the people are inherently globalized. They want product from different parts of the world. They want a globalized living standards. So it's there to stay. And because of that, a globalized economy, as Vietnam is, has still the potential to tap into a globalized mindset that is going to be irreplaceable in today's world.
It leads me to my next question, because for many decades it was assumed that Asia's economic rise is almost a guarantee that it will happen no matter what. But clearly, I think the Americans are trying to upset it, not only with the tariffs on individual countries, but also with transshipment tariffs. Do you think that Asian rise is a certainty, or do you think perhaps that the speed, at least, of the Asian economic rise could be brought down?
Well, America's prosperities and contributions to Asia's rise is undeniable. However, that's not the only reason why Asia has risen over the past half a century. It's the young, dynamic workforce. It's the growth of the middle-income class. It's the ingenuity and innovation base. All those factors are incredibly important in driving the Southeast Asians and East Asia's economies to where it is today. And those factors are still there. Those factors are intact. We have the population. We have the growth. We have an expanding middle income. China, despite the fact that its growth has slowed, continues to be a formidable force for growth. And all these factors come, not to mention India. So all these factors are going to support one another and to create a dynamic and mutually supportive growth in the region that is undeniably going to stay, despite whether or not the United States is going to be in or out of the region.
And finally, over the last couple of years, there's a lot has been said and written about the world transitioning to multipolarity. I wonder, though, if the contours of multipolarity are changing now, if perhaps it would require a little bit more conscious and bolder steps on the part of not only great powers like Russia, China, or India, but perhaps also, middle and smaller nations.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly in Vietnam, there is this belief that the world has not yet become multipolar, but it is transitioning there. And during the process, how multipolarity is going to turn out depends a lot on even minor players, lesser players, not just the major powers. So it is important that even the middle powers or even the minor powers like Vietnam or ASEAN countries must exert themselves, must contribute to the formation of this new global order that rests on multipolarity. You don't just react to it, but you have to actively come out and try to shape it in the way that you want. So certainly, yes, we will be bolder. We are going to be more assertive in protecting our interest and in shaping the order, not let the order shape us.
Well, that's a very inspiring goal. I'm looking forward to see how it plays out. In the meantime, thank you very much for being with us today.
It's an honor. Thank you for having me on your program.
And thank you for watching. Hope to see you again on Worlds Apart next week.